from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. A bill aimed at ending race-based hair discrimination could soon become law in California. The Crown Act, which stands for Create a Respectful and Open Workplace for Natural Hair, would, for example, outlaw policies at workplaces and schools that ban or single out as inappropriate natural black hairstyles, like afros, braids, and twists. Los Angeles Senator Holly Mitchell introduced the legislation that's now on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk, and she joins us now. Good morning, Senator Holly Mitchell.
Good morning, Mina. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. We're also joined by Dr. Tina Opie. She's associate professor at the Management Division at Babson College. She's founder of HairAsIdentity.com and the project Shared Sisterhood. Good morning, Tina Opie.
Good morning, Mina. Good morning, Senator Mitchell. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here as well. And so, Senator Mitchell, what were you hearing from your constituents and others that motivated you to introduce this bill?
You know, Mina, over the last several years, I'd begun to receive letters from parents that seen news coverage like many others about these new school policies that were sending primarily young girls, but students home for having their hair braided, twisted, or locked. Saw, like everyone else, last December, the young wrestler in high school in New Jersey who was really viciously attacked and had his locks cut in the middle of a wrestling meet, and really began to have conversations with fellow clients at my own loctician salon, and was stunned by the number of stories from people who I had, you know, sat next to them in the salon for years. I've been locked for 15 years now. And even my loctician was shocked to hear the really painful current stories about discrimination based on the way we choose to wear our hair in the workplace and school settings.
And you say painful. Do you have a personal story as well, Senator Mitchell?
You know, I don't have a personal story, interestingly enough. I decided to lock at 40. I was the CEO of an organization. Now, I was mindful and thoughtful of when I decided to lock. For me, it was kind of, you know, I turned 40. It was personal and political statement. I was clear about the statement I would be making to the world, and I was ready for that, quite frankly, personally and professionally. When I decided to run for office in 2010, I communicated to my consultants that I needed them to understand that me changing my hair was not an option, and that I fundamentally believe that the residents then of the 47th Assembly District in Los Angeles would be electing me if they so chose, based on what was inside of my head, not how I choose to wear my hair. Now I have a soon-to-be 19-year-old who made his decision to lock his senior year in high school, but that was a second attempt. He had a false start, if you will, received some bullying and pressure and unwelcome looks and comments at school, and stopped his locking process once. So I've certainly lived it and experienced it.
So what would the Crown Act do exactly?
So the Crown Act will clarify in the Fair Employment and Housing Act and in the Education Code that the definition of race is inclusive of traits historically associated with race, which will include hair texture and protective hairstyles. So while afros have been a protected class for quite some time, other natural hairstyles were not included. And so we are including locks, twists, and braids into the protected class category.
And
which means that,
yes,
you know, an employer, you can't have a workplace or a school site policy, dress code or policy that prevents you from wearing your hair in its natural state or in a natural hairstyle.
And Dr. Tina Opie, talk a little bit about the broader systemic issues, the hierarchies that it plays into when kids are told that they can't wear their hair in cornrows, locks, braids. This is something that you have been following closely and recognizing as a problem for some time now.
Yes, both as a black woman, as an academic, as well as someone who just has my eyes open. And you can look at our society and recognize that blackness is associated with inferiority. And in my research, I study identity, professionalism and authenticity. And I've conducted a number of empirical studies which show that natural hairstyles, so in the case of my studies, locks or afros, are deemed as less professional than straightened hair. And that connects directly to what we just mentioned, and I think it's even specified. When Senator Mitchell, I saw some video of her presenting the bill, she talks about these Eurocentric norms, which are beauty norms as well as norms of professionalism. And we are, historically, we have forced black people or people who diverge from those norms to conform, despite very high costs, costs that are related to health, finances, as well as time, not to mention the psychological cost of what it means. You know, when I used to have a relaxer, I cut off my relaxed hair in 1998, I believe it was, and I wore a short afro. And then, like Senator Mitchell, I locked my hair. I had locked hair for 10 years, and I cut that off, and I still have natural hair. But when I had a relaxer, I remember how I had to plan. If it rained and I had a meeting, that was a nightmare because I was concerned that if I got to the meeting and my hair was not, quote, professional, that there would be negative implications. And so my research is really about unpacking what we mean by the term professional and pointing out that that term is often very culturally biased. When you look at organizations' appearance policies, I mean, I won't name the company, but when you see appearance policies that on the surface sound great, we want a classic style. We want a clean, natural, professional style. But then you have to ask yourself, classic for whom? Natural for whom? Because when I see on this particular website images of people of color, they all have long, straight weaves. I did not see one picture of a woman, a black woman, with an afro or twists or locks. That is communicating a message to society about what is acceptable and what is not.
And when you talk about the health consequences, I mean, and you really shared well the psychological consequences, there are also, as studies have shown, very significant physical health consequences as well to using the chemicals. The chemicals can be very harsh and has been linked to things like reproductive issues and birth defects, even cancer.
Well, I'll tell you, when I became pregnant, we have two children. The doctors advised me not to get a chemical relaxer when I was pregnant because the chemicals could pass through my skin into the child and they would be harmful. So just consider that. We will tell women who are carrying children or who are planning to get pregnant not to use chemical relaxers, yet oftentimes many women feel forced to use those very same harmful products to maintain their job. So endometriosis, reproductive rights, there's been some, again, I am not a medical doctor, so, but I just think that there is a burgeoning interest in studying these connections between some of the maladies that specifically affect black women and how we style our hair.
We're talking with Dr. Tina Opie, Associate Professor at the Management Division of Babson College, and Holly Mitchell, State Senator for the 30th Senate District in Los Angeles. She's author of a bill that's on the governor's desk that would make California the first state to outlaw discrimination based on hairstyles and protecting black employees in particular and students from discrimination based on hair. Has this happened to you when you've worn your hair natural? What's been the reaction in professional settings? Do you think a Eurocentric image of professionalism is maintained at your office or school? What do you think of the bill overall? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your comments on our website, on Facebook, or tweet us at KQED Forum. Well, Lydia says they should not have needed to do this. VJ says this should have been covered by existing discrimination laws. Looks like too many legislatures have no work these days. Senator Mitchell, this reminds me of something you also brought up when you were giving your remarks related to the bill, which is that you said that there were several colleagues who questioned why this was even an issue, why you needed to legislate this. What was your response? What's your response to these listeners?
Well, and first of all, I would challenge any of your listeners who think that we don't have enough work to do to take a look at my record, the number of bills I've had passed into law, that I stood with the governor yesterday to sign a $215 billion spending plan for the state of California. I'm the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. I chaired the Budget Conference Committee this year. So I have a full plate. And this, too, is an important issue for my constituents and many of the constituents of my colleagues here in the legislature. I appreciate that people have the perception that it was unnecessary. However, every Supreme Court case going back to the 80s when black women in the airline industry and the banking industry were suing for the right to wear their hair braided, which you know, it was okay for Bo Derek in the movie 10, but wasn't okay for black women in the workplace. We've lost. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the employer. And so that's why this bill was necessary and why I was proud to author it. When I made my opening statements in a couple of the standing committees, I said that my goal with the bill was twofold. One was to perhaps educate my colleagues and others about the unique opportunities and experiences of black hair, and to dispel myths, commonly held myths. And so we talked about, you know, Eurocentric standards of beauty and other questions people may have about black hair texture and my opportunity to wear my hair in unique hairstyles that I can because of the texture of my hair. And so I've looked at it from a positive, you know, perspective, that these are opportunities I have to wear my hair in styles that others can't. And while the health consequences are important, the fundamental issue is choice, and that I have a right to wear my hair the way I deem appropriate as an adult. I have a right to send my child to school in a hairstyle that I, as her parent, deems appropriate. And I don't think that fact should be lost either.
Well, let's go to some phone calls. I'll start with Justin in Millbrae. Hi, Justin.
Good morning. I've never had a problem. I'm not black or white, by the way. And I've never had a problem with natural hair on African Americans. I actually find women to be quite beautiful with their hair natural. But it seems like in some situations, there has to be some line that is drawn. For example, if someone wants to wear a bright pink mohawk at the warehouse, at the workplace. So how and where and when do you draw lines when they need to be drawn? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Justin. Senator Mitchell?
Well, this bill doesn't apply to the bright pink mohawk. It protects natural hair and natural hairstyles and creates, you know, a protected class for natural hairstyles. So bright pink isn't natural and
would not be covered by this.
I guess a mohawk would have to be, you know, moose would have to be used to make it stand up. So that example would not be covered by this bill. And I think it's also important to acknowledge, because I had members ask, we're also not challenging workplaces that require for health and safety, you know, that you wear hair nets. Of course, if I work in food safety, I'm going to cover my locks in a hair net just as I would, you know, a non-natural style. Of course, if I work in manufacturing and a hard hat is required or some safety hair covering is required, this bill does not prevent employers from making those requirements either. That's logical.
Well, let me ask you about enforcement, though. I mean, say an employee is told that they need to wear a more professional hairstyle in order to be considered for promotion, and the employee reports this to HR or goes even further to the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing. According to this bill, what would happen next? How would this, you know, basically be enforced?
Because it's added to the protective categories, what would happen next is just the same as if I were to go and say, I think I didn't get a promotion because I'm female, I'm black, or I'm gay, or because I'm of my religious affiliation, I'm Jewish. We're adding protective hairstyles to those existing protected classes, or I didn't get a promotion because I'm over 40. So all of those categories that we've come to support and believe are important for a fair and just workplace and society, an individual would have those same rights to challenge.
Well, Tina Opie, I described a more explicit discrimination based on hair, specifically for a promotion or so on. But we know these things can be super subtle. I mean, you could have somebody come up to you and say, hey, you know, you need to look a little more professional, or you need to look a little more polished, you know, consider some changes to the way you wear your hair, et cetera. How would an employee address that?
I'm chuckling because I would say that I've had students ask me the same question, and sort of my response is, when you're starting out, I hate to say it, there are going to be some people who are encountering this. And then I think I would follow Senator Mitchell's advice, which is where you may report it to HR and then pursue it from there. However, as people become more senior, I've been asked that question, for example. And when people say, oh, you need to be more professional, or you wouldn't wear your hair like that if you were still in banking or consulting, would you? And I just put a smile on my face and say, what made you say that? And then they typically turn colors because they're embarrassed and they realize that they have made a statement that is discriminatory, that they have made an assumption that is based on their own background, and they haven't considered my background. And I do have a question for those people, just going back to an earlier comment that was made, that this is not relevant. For those of you with straight hair, how would you respond if tomorrow, in order to keep your job, you had to have an afro? And that might sound absolutely ridiculous, because what it does is it twists the status hierarchy on its head. But if those with straight hair had to change their natural hair to conform to their organization's requirements, how would they respond? I don't think that they would find that to be an easy situation. And that is what many Black women and people have been experiencing as they struggle behind the scenes. They do the additional labor and have the burden of trying to conform to these policies.
Tina Opie, I read your Harvard Business Review piece about what managers and leaders can do to actually create an organizational culture that would help people feel much more like they could be who they are within the workplace. And one of the things that you talk about is for leaders to begin by reexamining their own biases, essentially. And I think your question probably really gets to the heart of that in helping people see whether or not they understand this issue as clearly as they think they do.
Yes, and in both of those questions. So the initial question I posed was when I said, why would you say that, or what made you say that? And then also asking the question I just posed to straight-haired people. What we're trying to do with this discussion is get people who have never considered the additional burden that others may be sharing to consider that, to think about what it would take, and actually ask yourselves, is this even task relevant? Our research shows that it's not, and therefore it should be a protected class. And so I was really ecstatic to learn about Senator Mitchell's legislation, because I think it will help organizations, hopefully, be more proactive, because we know that creating inclusive, welcoming spaces actually attracts talent and may lead to competitive advantage. So rather than fighting to adhere to these Eurocentric norms, what would happen if organizations said, okay, we're going to consider that this may have been a blind spot in the past, and if we open ourselves up to allowing individuals to bring their authentic selves to work, and we're not talking about grooming. I think Senator Mitchell had a very important point. This is not about pink hair or a mohawk necessarily. This is about people being able to wear their hair in natural or protective styles that help them maintain tangle-free, more manageable hair. That's what we're talking about.
We're getting a lot of questions around natural. Well, first, this listener writes, for years I struggled with this issue until I started wearing dreads 20 years ago. Last year I shaved my head and would still like that to be seen as professional. It is a natural hairstyle. This listener tweets, are braids and twists, quote, natural? It takes time to shape hair in that form. It seems more like a choice of how to look, akin to wearing makeup. Senator Mitchell, natural. Can you help this listener out?
You know, I'm amused at how people are really trying to not understand this and make it more complicated than it really is. And so when we say natural hair, it means that I'm keeping my hair in its natural texture. That means I'm not using heat or lye to artificially straighten it. And a natural hairstyle is a style in which I can style my hair in its natural state. And so because my hair has a particular texture, because it is thick and coarse, My hair can lock. My hair can be braided and hold a braid. And so, you know, it may be a matter of semantics. And so perhaps we say protective hairstyles or hairstyles that natural hair can be styled in. Whatever the case may be, you know, twists, locks, and braids is a way of styling one's hair, just as if you were to put it in a ponytail or a, as some would call, a French braid or pulled back into a chignon. Those are styles. Locks, twists, and braids are styles that I can style my natural hair in.
Well, this listener tweets, braids, twists, afros, and dreads are kempt hair. That's the only standard necessary. Kempt hair is professional hair. This listener writes, how does the law interact with the notion of cultural appropriation? Say a white woman gets locks and her employer says, not that it is unkempt or unprofessional, but that it communicates something in conflict with a company's corporate values. Tina Opie, you have some thoughts on this?
I don't think that this legislation speaks to that. And I agree with Senator Mitchell. I don't want to make this more complicated than it needs to be. So I appreciate the listener's call, but I really do want to focus on questions that are helping us to clarify the legislation, which is, again, about natural hairstyles. And because Afrocentric hair, I mean, there's a variety, there's a diversity of Afrocentric hair, but for the most part, it might be kinkier or coilier or curlier or wavier and coarser, or it could be fine, but there's a variety of hairstyles, but specifically braids, twists, and locks are the styles that we're talking about in this legislation.
And Tina, we talk about the legislation that's being proposed in New York and New Jersey. I know you followed the New York City policy, which enacted its own effort to clarify that black hairstyles are protected racial characteristics under the New York City human rights law. But do you think this will be that California's effort will be a national precedent? Do you see it having an effect, a positive impact in New York and New Jersey?
Well, I hope so. I mean, I really do think so. My understanding is that when these cases, as Senator Mitchell mentioned earlier, have gone to the Supreme Court, that the Supreme Court has sided with the employer because the courts found that hair texture is a racial trait and that traits are not protected under the law. So what I'm hoping is that because of Senator Mitchell's leadership in this legislation, that people will understand that traits that are specifically associated with a particular race should in fact be protected, so that in New York or New Jersey and where other states where this kind of legislation is percolating, they would adapt these laws, and I'm hoping that it would have an influence on the Supreme Court's sort of discussion about what constitutes race and racial discrimination.
All right. Well, let me go next to May in San Francisco. Hi, May.
Hi. You had talked about briefly, you know, what do you do when someone says something and you smile? What do you do when you go into an interview and you have, you know, relaxed hair, and then a couple months on the job you're doing really well, and you decide to go to, like, a natural hairstyle, and all of a sudden your boss, your coworkers, and even HR start to say things like, oh, okay, so you're wearing your hair like that now. What do you do with that?
I'm so glad that you called in and raised that question, because that's what we hear a lot about. And that's really the crux of the bill and why I emphasize choice, because I also want my sisters who are choosing to wear their hair straight to understand that this bill isn't a slant against them. The point is choice. And the point is I should have the right, if I so choose, to straighten my hair. And if I so choose, to change that. And so the point of this bill is to protect you once hired in the interview process or even in a promotion process for your hair choice to not be a criteria that's taken into account.
Yes. I mean, basically, there are real consequences in your job, in your school, in your academic setting for this. This is what takes it beyond just the level of hairstyle. It's actually that you're experiencing consequences for the hair that you have. And Jeffrey says, if you don't think hairstyle norms are racist, just consider how Native American children were forced to have their hair cut in when put in boarding school. Julia Julie tweets, the late professor Kendall Jackson taught a class on black hair at Stanford in the early 90s. He was excoriated by the conservative Stanford Review. Thank you for drawing attention to an issue that is seemingly benign but gets to the heart of our dignity as black people. Senator Mitchell, it's on Governor Newsom's desk. Do you have any indication of whether he'll sign it?
We've been in conversations with the governor. I've been in conversations with the governor personally since we introduced the bill. I had no idea, quite frankly, it would take on this national kind of draw this kind of national attention or movement. But I was talking to him about it as I talked to him about my bill package and something that I felt very passionate about and, you know, impacted me personally. I thought it was appropriate that as a legislator, who wears her hair in a natural style, that I be the one to carry the bill. So I feel really, really good that based on the overwhelming support it received in the legislature, that he'll take it under serious consideration.
And Senator Mitchell, you mentioned Googling professional and unprofessional hairstyles. And when you Googled unprofessional hairstyles, you saw images of black people and natural black hair. What you're legislating to some extent is not just changes to the language in, you know, fair housing and the education code. You're also advocating a culture change, feels like.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that the parents and the young girls who have written me letters, who I've seen postings on Facebook, will begin to understand that the way their hair grows is acceptable and is fine. And they are whole and complete and beautiful just the way they are. So it is not only a culture change for the outside world, but also in terms of self-esteem building and making it okay for us to wear our hair in its natural state for black women and men as well.
And Dr. Tina Opie, any final thoughts in our last 30 seconds?
I would just say thank you again to Senator Mitchell and to you all for showcasing this really important issue. People perform better when they're authentic, when their best self on the inside is consonant with their appearance and their behavior, and this legislation helps move us toward that.
Dr. Tina Opie, Associate Professor at the Management Division of Babson College, founder of HairAsIdentity.com and the project Shared Sisterhood. Holly Mitchell, a state senator for the 30th Senate District in Los Angeles and author of SB 188. Senator Mitchell, Dr. Opie, thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mina. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for their questions and comments. Another hour of Forum is next. We'll be talking parenting with Emily Oster. So stay with us for that. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.